Shabbat Shalom. Welcome to this week's Living Torah, and God willing, I'll be heading out tomorrow morning, Thursday, for Ohio. A couple of places up there. You can check our website, and if you're in the area, please email and get some directions and come on by. It's going to be a great time. I just know that already. I know the people I'm going up to see, and it's going to be an incredible time. So really looking forward to that. Couple of things is, what I haven't mentioned this in a long time, is Lev HaOlam, and you can get their link on our website. Lev HaOlam is a group of, it's actually, led by Nadi Ram, and he is put together this really unique thing to where we can support the so-called West Bank. We can support Israel. And so if you've, it's $120 a month. I know that not everybody can afford that, but if you can, maybe you can put a group of people together and you get a package of goodies every month from Israel. And it's just an incredible thing. This past month was some chocolates, of course. A lot of times it's chocolates, but a lot of times it's honey, it's dates, it's some shampoo from Israel. It's kind of one of our favorite times every single month. So if this is something you can do, it's also a pretty good witnessing thing. We use some of these items. We give them out to other people. And never the chocolates. They never go away from here. So that's a good thing you can do if you're able to. And from a media note, I'm now on Vimeo. I've been kind of putting off a number of things, upgrades, and I'm finally doing this. So with the advent of the iPad and the iPhone and the Androids and all of these different things, got to step up and get with the technology. So we are on Vimeo. You can go on our homepage and you can click on that link. And that's also allowing me to do something that I've thought about for a while, is all of these videos that I have from, you know, 2.5, almost 3 years now of the book of Matthew, I still have them on my computer. And so over the next couple of months, I guess it is, probably, it takes a lot of time to encode them and to load them up. So I'm planning on doing a lot of this to where all of the complete Matthew series, as recorded then, I'm not going to go in and edit this little bit out. I'm not going to edit that out, but all of it will be on Vimeo. And so I know that I had someone last week, a couple weeks ago, that mentioned that their parents had a Roku, and I've never even seen a Roku. I know the basics of it, but they can get Vimeo on that. And so here we are live on Vimeo this week, and we'll be adding more and more to that. On another note, the Pope was in Israel this past weekend, up to no good as usual, and it was quite an interesting thing to watch as the Pope was there. As he went from Jordan, of course, and into the Palestinian areas first, he prayed at the wall that Israel built to keep the Palestinians out, right? To keep them out of bombing innocent civilians on the streets. So the picture of him standing there and praying where many believe that Yeshua went through a mikveh there on the Jordan River, and then for him to go to the wall, and then, you know, I guess in kind of an effort to appease the Jews, he went to the Western Wall in various places, but it was all just, it was a travesty. And so the other night I'm watching a little bit about this, and a picture came up on the television, and I actually stopped the TV there. I just paused it there, and I took a picture with my camera of the Pope there in Bethlehem at the Nativity, I believe, the Church of the Nativity, I believe. So I'm going to put this picture up as I'm talking here, and I want you to take a look at this shot. Now, how much is wrong there in that picture? Here's the Pope standing there with the backdrop of a manger scene with three Catholic priests, I guess one of them probably being the Pope of that time, I guess that's a Franciscan monk, and a nun. And then, now look at the nun, if you can see this good enough, look at the nun, she has a cross around her neck, The Franciscan monk has a cross around on his belt. This is just over the top crazy. So come back before your blood pressure goes up too far. And just think of this. How ridiculous, as John Wayne said, it's hard to stop stupid. And this, for somebody to believe that this is actually the how do you do this? To believe that there was a Catholic nun there at the birth of a Jewish Messiah? The Catholic Church hadn't even been invented yet for another 300 years. So yeah, I just thought it was, it is what it is. And it takes us right here to the crucifixion. The verses of Matthew chapter 27. And I have to tell you that this section, and I don't know how many weeks we've been going through this since back into Matthew chapter 26, but these have been some of the most difficult verses for me to get through on a weekly basis. It seems like now that I understand, and maybe this is happening to you also, but maybe now that I understand more of the foundation of Scripture, the Torah, it's bringing these verses into a whole new light, a whole new perspective, seeing religion on parade, which is what that picture was, is religion on parade, and exactly the reason and what nailed Messiah to that stake. And so with that, we're going to go into chapter 27, verse 33. It says, when he arrived at the place called Golgotha, which means the place of a skull, there's various places that is believed this could be. There is, of course, Gordon's Calvary, which is there north of Jerusalem. It's a place that's owned by I can't remember who owns it. I guess it I don't think it's a Catholic area, but it's owned by the Church of England. That's who owns it, and it's a beautiful place, a beautiful garden. And they have a guide there that takes you around and gives some pretty good evidence, I think, that this is a possibility. However, in the end, I mean, there's a garden there, and this could have been the place of Joseph of Arimathea. There is a cistern there. There is a tomb there. And there is a tomb. There's a large stone. And there's nobody in it, okay? And so, and that's the great thing about this whole thing is there's nobody in there. But they give some arguments for. I personally have backed away from that. I used to kind of go along with that years ago as I went to Israel, but I really backed away from that. And there's really two areas now. One of them I videotaped. The video is still on the internet on our website. Videos from Israel. Last year, I met a guy that I think gave some pretty good arguments that there's an area right, kind of if you were standing there at the Eastern Gate or the Lion's Gate, St. Stephen's Gate, there's a hill right there. It's actually a tell, which is a lot of ruins, and it's possible that that was the place. The other one would be across the Mount of Olives, and was the place of the red heifer. And of course, when you mention the red heifer, that brings up all kinds of prophetic significance. I read an article yesterday, I think it was, that said that a possible red heifer had been grown, and you know, this, people were all excited about it. The only problem is it's in Arkansas, and I just can't see the red heifer of the end times being grown in Arkansas. What do you think? You know, at least Oklahoma. No. I think it'll come from Jerusalem. I think it'll come from Israel, specifically from Israel. Okay. I don't think it'll come from Arkansas. So, but to get off of that, we don't know exactly where Messiah was taken, where this place called Golgotha actually is. And to me, it's not important. It is in a way, but it is not of high importance because it is not about where it happened. It is that it happened. That he was taken with Cyrene, a man from Cyrene named Shimon, who helped him take that execution stake, that beam, to this place. And at this place, as I went through in detail from Chuck Swindoll's book last week, we would have seen what would have happened there if of his hands and his feet being nailed to that stake. All of them would have happened. This would have happened with three nails, one on each of the wrists, and one in the in his feet. That it happened is what is important here. And it says that in verse 34, they gave him wine mixed with bitter gall to drink. But after he tasted it, he would not drink it. Now, it is said that this was a sour wine that had a bit of frankincense in it. And the gall, and there's all kinds of speculation, okay? There, and I'm sure there's going to be many, many more meanings to this when Messiah is able to tell us exactly what happened here. But it is said that this is a drink that would be given to a person who is upon that stake in order to kind of take the edge off the pain. It was what we would term today a painkiller. You know, it was the ibuprofen, the Advil, the Tylenol of that day. You got to be kidding me. An act of compassion. Here's a man that has been betrayed. He's been beaten. He's been ridiculed. Every possible thing that Rome and this group of non-Torah teachers of the Pharisees of that day, everything that they could bring together, and then to do something in an act of compassion. I think this is probably more ridiculous than the nun that is standing there in the manger scene. But it does fulfill Scripture. It does fulfill prophecy. And we're going to go to a couple of them. And one of them is in Proverbs 31. And many of us are very familiar with Proverbs 31, the last part of it. When's the last time that you read the first part of these verses? Proverbs 31 and verse 5. Let's just go up to verse 2. Know, my son, no son of my womb, no son of my vows, don't give your strength to women or your ways to that which destroys kings. It is not for kings, Lemuel, not for kings to drink wine. It is not for rulers to ask, where can I find strong liquor? For they may drink, then forget what has been decreed, and pervert the justice due to the poor. Now, give strong liquor to one who is perishing, or it could be translated, give wine to one who is perishing. Wine to the deeply depressed. Let him drink, forget his poverty, and cease to remember his troubles. Okay, the reason that Messiah does not drink this mixture of wine and frankincense and whatever else is here, because this is not a time for him to forget. There is no way at this moment to take away the sting of sin that has been placed upon him. And as you and I consider the Torah in the midst of this, what we're dealing with here, the sin of the world that is the sin of you and I that is placed upon him, we're not just talking about going to the restaurant and eating some, mistakenly eating some bacon bits on our salad. It is not the, oh, we forgot to keep the calendar the right way, or the silly things that people divide themselves over today. It is the very division. It is the very root of the division that sent him to that, say, is the rebellion of man. It is the arrogance, it's the pride, it is the stiff-necked, it's the hard-hearted, it's the secret things that are done that nailed him upon that stake. And he was taking the full brunt of it all. Given the opportunity to have the edge taken off, he said, no, no. Because there is no way for the edge to be taken off of sin. I remember there's a couple of songs I want to bring out to you. One of those is popular many years ago by a man who went off the deep end. But his name was Ray Bolts. And the song that still to this day, the words just echo in my mind, and I tried to find somebody else on iTunes that sang it the way that Ray Bolts. I guess it may be because of what Ray Bolts was dealing with in his life, and I don't know what he's dealing with today, but maybe because of what he was dealing with back then, that it added something to the words of the song. And the song was, "Does he still feel the nails every time I fail?" And you can go online and you can listen to a snippet of this, but does he still feel the nails every time I fail? Does he still hear the crowd cry, crucify him, every time that we reject the power that he has given to us to overcome? When we allow ourselves to fall into things, knowing better, does he still feel the nails every time I fail? Those are words that would be good for us to plaster around somewhere. The other song that I want to bring out is one that I have all the lyrics to, and one of the secrets of life is that my wife Kathy is an incredible singer, and she's going to get me for saying this, but I've seen her. You remember the days we used to have special songs? We don't do that anymore because somewhere along the way we lost some things, and I think maybe we should get some of that back. But that's another subject. But a song that Kathy used to sing and was one of the most popular out there was one that is called "When He Was on the Cross, I Was on His Mind." And I'd like to read you the lyrics to this song because I think they're so appropriate right here. It says, "I'm not on an ego trip. I'm nothing on my own. I'm not on an ego trip. I'm nothing on my own. I made mistakes. I often slip. Just common flesh and bones. But I'll prove someday just why I say I'm of a special kind. For when he was on the cross, I was on his mind. The look of love was on his face. Thorns were on his head. The blood was on his scarlet robe, stained a crimson red. Though his eyes were on the crowd that day, he looked ahead in time. For when he was on the cross, I was on his mind." And the chorus is this: "He knew me, yet he loved me. He whose glory makes the heavens shine, so unworthy of such mercy. Yet when he was on the cross, I was on his mind. Yet when he was on the cross, I was on his mind." Incredible, incredible song. And I, as I was reading the lyrics to that, you know what? I just it dawned on me that there are people out there in our this movement that would, instead of seeing the message that is in those lyrics, would have tried to take them apart. As I read that about his robe, and we see that he was stripped from his robe. The word cross. I know people out there, I don't associate with them, but I know people out there that would be so quick to take apart words and miss the message. And that is what is happening right here at a place called Golgotha, Calvary, a place of the skull. It's what's happening is a group of people that are there gathered around him that have forgotten the message. The message of redemption. And have looked at the letter of the law and have placed him upon the placed the Torah upon the stake, because the letter of the law had overcome the spirit of the law. This is why Paul would say the letter kills and the spirit brings forth life, but that life is out of the letter. But if we just focus over here, the letter, then fake compassion gives a drink of bitter wine and frankincense to a person upon a stake. It's so hard to put these things into words. What is truly, truly going on here? And as I'm reading, I'm reminded another song, you know, come popping into mind. Another song that Kathy did years ago that was another favorite. And the words in there were, he grew the tree that he knew would be used to make the old rugged cross. That's another way of saying that Messiah was slain from the foundations of the earth. For in creation, there was a seed planted that would produce seed and produce trees and produce seed and produce trees and produce seed. And somewhere going all the way back to the days of creation was the seed that would be used to grow a tree, so that the Creator who had created the seed itself could be placed upon that tree for our redemption, so that he could keep his word, the word of a covenant that he had spoken to Adam 4,000 years earlier, a covenant that said, I will restore. And he walked out the steps of a biblical covenant. In the end, planting a tree, hanging upon a tree, and spilling the blood of the covenant upon that tree, so that you and I could be restored to relationship, which is what our redemption is all about. This whole thing that's going on here is not about just taking away the sin, because you can have a person who is a sinner, and you can take away the sin and just set it to the side, but it doesn't restore the person. The message of the scripture is this, that he is not just wanting to take our sin and just kind of set it to the side on the shelf somewhere. But the message of the stake, the tree, the message of the covenant is to restore relationship. Maybe that's why the enemy today is fighting so hard against this restoration. Because this restoration is about us being able once again to love Yahweh our Elohim with all our heart, soul, and strength, and love our neighbor as ourself. To restore restoration, to restore relationship vertically and horizontally. And the enemy is working so hard today to keep that from happening. After they had nailed him to the stake, they divided his clothes among them by throwing dice. And when we go to the other Gospels, we pick up a little bit more of this. But basically, it goes, we're going to go to, first of all, let's go to Psalm 69. I kind of got ahead of myself there. Let's go back to this thing of the gall and the wine. Psalm 69, starting in verse 20. You know how I am insulted, shamed, and disgraced. Before you stand all my foes. This is David, of course, that is speaking prophetically. Something that's happening to him, but is speaking prophetically of what would happen to Messiah. You know how I am insulted, shamed, and disgraced. Before you stand all my foes, insults have broken my heart to the point that I could die. I hoped that someone would show compassion, but nobody did. And there would be comforters, but I found none. They put poison in my food and my thirst. They gave me vinegar to drink. It goes on from there. This is David that is speaking these words. And he is speaking about his own life, prophesying about what would be in the life of Messiah. But maybe you're reminded in the midst of this of the words that a servant is not greater than his master. And that which they have done to the master, they will also do to the servant. The verse that I stand as a hallmark, I desire, is to know him and the power of his resurrection. And the rest of that in Philippians chapter 3 is to be conformed in the image of his death and suffering. So David was speaking of himself, he was speaking of Messiah, but he's also speaking to you and I in the future. These same words can be spoken over many of us today that are following him. Okay, back to the verse of after they nailed him to the stake, they divided his clothes among them by throwing dice. In Psalm 22, verse 15. There's nothing more that I would like to do than head over to some really nice, the joy of the Lord is my strength. And going through these verses again is just, and I've read them over, but reading them and teaching them week after week, it's like you want to take a break. I want to go over and talk about something else. No, stay right here. Because he stayed right there. Psalm 22, verse 15. I am poured out like water. All my bones are out of joint. My heart has become like wax. It melts inside me. My mouth is as dry as a fragment of a pot. My tongue sticks to my palate. You lay me down in the dust of death. Dogs are all around me. A pack of villains closes in on me. like a lion at my hands and feet. I can count every bone, every one of my bones, while they gaze at me and gloat. They divide my garments among themselves for my clothing. They throw dice. Let's go back up to verse 17, and it should read this. Dogs are all around me. A pack of villains closes in on me. They pierced my hands and my feet. Now, what happened to those verses? What happened in that verse is this. If we go back to the Septuagint, we see that it is, they pierced my hands and my feet. But it was the Masoretes in about 200 years after the death and resurrection of Messiah who retranslated the scriptures with a bit of anti-Messiah, anti-Yeshua bend to them. And so they put in here, which could be, you know, different lettering and vowel points, couldn't be lions and can be they pierced to either one. But when they found the Dead Sea Scrolls, the second witness. See, in order for truth, there must be two witnesses. So we have the Septuagint over here, the Masoretic text over here. We only have one witness of what the word actually was. But if you go to the Dead Sea Scrolls, which were written before Messiah, so there's no anti-Messiah bend to the words that are on the Dead Sea Scrolls. It says, they pierced my hands and my feet. A prophecy over 1,000 years prior to Messiah of a crucifixion. There was no death that we know of in that day that a person's hands and feet would be pierced in the days that that David wrote this. But God knew. The Father knew from the foundations of the earth, for He planted a tree that He knew would be used for Him to hang upon. Dogs are all around me. I count every one of my bones. It's said that on a stake, after you'd been hung there like this, that you could feel every one of your bones as it was pulling out of the ligaments. I can count every one of my bones. And then an amazing, amazing verse. They sat down to keep watch over him there. The dogs, it's what Psalm 22 said. The dogs have encompassed him. And they sat down, Roman centurions and various religious leaders that are still there. Of course, we do see there are a few people, and we'll get to that in a few weeks, but they sat down to watch him. What do you say to that? Where's he going? I mean, you know, are they're keeping watch over him? For what purpose? He's not going anywhere. They've made sure of that. He has no strength to go anywhere. He's lost so much blood. Dehydrated. Infections, the insects that are biting at the wounds. If you were to take him up off that stake at that very moment and give the finest of medical treatment, he would not survive. Watching your redemption before you. Watching the redemption. Watching the covenant. Watching the promise die right before you. it is amazing to me what man can do to man. Just separate out for a moment, for a moment's time, separate out the covenant, the promise, what is going, this is a man. In their eyes, this is a man hanging between two other men. Interesting that the mother of two of the disciples had asked, could my sons be on your right hand and on your left? And Messiah said, you have no clue what you're talking about. Because those that would be on his right and on his left didn't want to be there. Not in this day. Because in order to be on the right and left in the kingdom, you'd have to go through the stake. That's the message that did not ring in their ears. And I dare say today that's not the message that most people are getting now with feel-good gospel. Forget that before the kingdom is a cross. Before the kingdom is a stake. Before life, there is death. Messiah walked it out and gave us the way to walk. And they sat down and they watched him. What man is capable of doing to man is astonishing today. It's astonishing to me. But when he was on, I got to finish this up somehow. But when he was on that stake, I was on his mind. When he was on that stake, you were on his mind. And he refused to take the wine and the frankincense. He refused to take what would take the edge off. The question, does he still feel the nails every time we fail? May this teaching, may this account give us a renewed passion. Coming up on Shavuot in a week, may it give us renewed passion to seek the power from on high that can give us the strength to say no to that which put him upon the stake. Now that we are redeemed, we need to seek the strength through him to say no to that which put him on the stake. That's called glorifying him. That's called being his witness. That's called just sheer appreciation for what he has done for us. With that, Shavua Tov. Have a wonderful, prosperous, blessed week. And Bezrat Hashem, God willing, see you again next week.
Yivarechach Adonai v'yishmarecha Ya'er Adonai panav elecha v'yichunecha Yisa Adonai V'yasem lecha shalom.